Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Thomas Ferguson, who's a professor of political science at the University of Massachusetts, Boston. He is a member of the advisory board for George Soros' Institute for New Economic Thinking and a contributing editor to The Nation. He's also the author of Golden Rule, The Investment Theory of Part Competition and the Logic of Money-Driven Political Systems. Welcome to Background Briefing, Thomas Ferguson.
Hi there.
And thank you for joining us on this May Day, which workers around the world celebrate, except here in the United States.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to be working myself, let me put it that way.
Well, I think we should rename May Day here in the United States as Job Creators Day. What do you think of that?
Well, that makes about as much sense as anything else I've heard. That is to say, frankly, you know, you have Labor Day. They might as well just move it to May 1st, if you ask me.
So this is not to say, though, that labor and the working class in this country are completely dead or that their issues are beaten into the ground. There seems to be a kind of resurgence here, not so much of workers' rights and reestablishing unions in this country, but there's certainly the issue of income inequality seems to be gaining traction in this election year. And the new book by Thomas Piketty, Capital in the 21st Century, is a runaway bestseller. So what's your sense of whether this activity, if you will, in the political zeitgeist will lead to working Americans having a greater voice in their government that's largely responsive to the 1% in our money-driven political system?
All right. Now, you didn't tell me, Ian, that you were going to make jokes during the – I mean, that one on the last part, I think I'd have a hard time swallowing. Look, a couple things here. The first thing to be said is it's not just a discussion. There's an enormous amount of dissension and efforts to organize in low-wage occupations, and it's spread. It's not spread evenly throughout the country, but there's a tremendous amount of it in many parts of the United States. I mean, you get, of course, the national movement to raise the minimum wage, which was embraced by some Democratic leaders, though I think it is perfectly obvious that Harry Reid in particular is not really planning to have any minimum wage thing pass, and in the unlikely event it comes to a vote in the Senate, it certainly won't pass the House of Representatives. But anyway, there really is the if you like, the lowest wage sections of this society really are shaking, and I think that reflects the very direct pressures on them. I mean, the stagnation in American wages for everybody but the 1% since 2008 is obvious. People feel it. And, you know, that's the real thing down in the ground that's, you know, the discussion that you were just referring to. It's making that kind of hot. Now, my reading of what's going on with the discussion is relatively straightforward. I have actually seen some Democratic Party documents on polling, and they sort of quite straightforwardly admit that when you do focus groups and ask people about the president or the administration, most people don't have much feeling for him at all, or it. They can't think of anything that's much done for them. On the other hand, when you start talking about inequality and make comparisons to Republicans, rather along the lines the Democrats did in the 2012 election, you know, then people start to shift. So the frame matters there. And, you know, this was obvious late last year when the president gave a speech on inequality. And, you know, then there were the election of some mayors where you could see the official who had won with labor support. And then the organized Democratic establishment, say when the Clintons, for example, were clearly supporting, like, the election of the inauguration of the mayor of New York, Bill de Blasio. And there's clearly an effort by the organized Democratic establishment to reach out to sort of this in sort of inchoate movement on the ground. Now, when you look closely at the Piketty phenomenon, it's pretty interesting. Piketty's probably wasn't the first place he stopped, but very soon when he got there, he did a presentation with an affiliate of the Center for American Progress, you know, whose chief organizer is now in the White House, that's John Podesta. And then, most interestingly, the Treasury Secretary, who doesn't usually have time to see anybody interested in inequality, decided he'd see Piketty. That was given out as news. And the whole sort of East Coast Piketty trip became very plainly a kind of sort of cultural reinforcement of the White House emphasis on inequality. I mean, they're basically trying to shift the discussion to that because they've got trouble on a straightforward comparison, say, of their record. I mean, they look good only compared to, say, Republicans. I mean, you know, or another way of putting the point is that, you know, running against Mitt Romney was almost the only way the president could have gotten reelected in 2012. And not very much is going well for them right now in the White House. So I don't think you're going to stop hearing this. But, you know, actual stuff happening here that does much about inequality, I mean, geez. I mean, you just look at what the White House has been doing recently, where their own federal communications nominees want to end network neutrality. There is, in fact, not much real movement to increase the minimum wage, even among the Democrats. They fell short there in a Senate vote not long ago. And a lot of people I know who are close students of the Congress think that it's very plain that at least the Senate Democratic leadership really doesn't want to move that bill at all. They just want to talk about it. And the president's got real trouble with Hispanics because he hasn't basically delivered much for them. After, you know, hyping at least the DREAM Act sort of thing in 2012. So, you know, what do we think of all this? Well, it's a lot of talk. I think it's very plainly directed toward creating a climate in which it gets easier to vote for Democrats. Is it going to lead to big changes in national politics? I rather doubt it. You know, I mean, the basic facts of political money haven't changed. Indeed, you know, a sort of postscript to Piketty, you know, the work that I've done with Ji Chen and Paul Jorgensen, for example, you know, we ran a piece in Alternet right early in January where we sort of walked through some of the basic facts. At the time, the early mayoral elections and discussions of inequality started. It just is the case that this is talk about an issue, not real policy changes.
Again, I'm speaking with Thomas Ferguson, who's a professor of political science at the University of Massachusetts, Boston. He's a member of the advisory board for George Soros' Institute for New Economic Thinking and a contributing editor to The Nation. He is the author of Golden Rule, The Investment Theory of Part Competition and the Logic of Money-Driven Political Systems. So, in other words, Tom Ferguson, in the real world, well, you know, they may be talking a good game in Washington, at least the Democrats, but in the real world, the fact remains that in the last few decades, nearly half of U.S. income gains went to the richest 1%. That is the real trend that we're on, right?
That's right. I don't see much coming out of the White House or any place else in Washington to change that.
So what will change it then?
Well, I'm afraid that unless, I mean, the type of thing, the upsurge from below is not a torrent, but it's more than a trickle. I mean, all of these little campaigns in various cities to raise the minimum wage, you know, through state action and things like that, that's helpful. Now, you know, the trade union movement, some of the unions have supported those minimum wage efforts indirectly. But, you know, on the whole, I'm not impressed by where the AFL-CIO has been out here, though I would say I would give Mr. Trumka, its head, very high marks on helping to crush the effort to reduce Social Security benefits last year. That was a pretty impressive effort. But, you know, I'm glad people are holding on to their sort of basic benefits, at least thus far. But there's nothing here in sight that's going to reverse it. And even the folks, you know, everybody who seems to be mentioned as a potential Democratic president presidential candidate in 2016. They're out and around in Wall Street. You can read some of this stuff in the media where they go out and give speeches before the main Wall Street houses for large sums of money. You know, there's nothing to change that in sight. And indeed, you know, we have just more loosening of regulations now for individual contributors into the sort of political finance. I mean, you know, between the Supreme Court and the inaction of both the White House and Congress on political money, which is really the whole ballgame, nothing's going to change there.
Well, I must say, Tom Ferguson, you know, I try to follow this subject. I have been for years, of the growing power of an oligarchy in America at the same time that American democracy is becoming more and more hollow and more of a kind of a game show democracy. But at this point, you know, I've sort of, I don't know how many people I can talk to that keep reinforcing these facts about what's happening. And now you have a new report from the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, the OECD, based on the World Top Income Database, that's reinforcing what we're talking about in terms of growing income inequality. And the U.S., is, of course, is the outlier or the worst example of it. And then, you know, I just did a piece recently with some scholars at Princeton who've done a study. They didn't want to use the word oligarchy, but they talk about the economic elite, that if the economic elite in America want a policy in Washington, there's a 50-50 chance they'll get it. If they want to block something and stop a policy, that policy only has a 1 in 5 chance of succeeding. In fact, 18% chance of succeeding. So these are all stark reminders of the facts. But, you know, I just sometimes feel that facts matter less and less. I just don't know what it is that's going to spark the consciousness of this country to say enough already.
Well, be careful. I mean, we don't have direct evidence to the consciousness of the country. What we have is what you read in the corporate mass media mostly. That's not, I mean, there's lots of agitation. And you know, the efforts, particularly on the minimum wage and people's small strikes and things like that, there's really a lot of it. What's driving, what's going to finally settle this is the whether or not you can get something like a sustained recovery going. At the moment, it doesn't look like anything particularly interesting is happening. To the extent you have a recovery, it manages to do it without many good jobs for people. And it's very weak, and it can be reversed fairly easily. So, you know, I think wait a while is my suggestion. I counsel, you know, we are now in our fifth year of this since 2008. And the sequence in the Great Depression was in, out, out, in, and then the center starts to dissolve. The center is very plainly dissolving in American politics right now. Now, you know, that doesn't say that, you know, if you want a happy ending guaranteed, you need to see a Disney movie. But,
Tom, when the center dissolves, does it move, does the critical mass move to the left or to the right?
It's not clear to me and which way that'll go, you know, exactly, because you have split power in Washington right now. And here's the thing, though. It's not like there's a formula on the conventional right that will restore prosperity. I mean, not, you know, just doing the free market routine again is not going to get people back to work. I think that will readily become obvious to the extent anybody tilts national policy that way. And then what happens, I'm not so sure.
Again, I'm speaking with Thomas Ferguson, who's a professor of political science at the University of Massachusetts, Boston. He's a member of the advisory board for George Soros' Institute for New Economic Thinking and a contributing editor to The Nation. He is the author of Golden Rule, The Investment Theory of Part Competition and the Logic of Money-Driven Political Systems. Well, of course, you know, we do have this stagnant economy, and at the same time, just Wednesday of this week, the stock market hit a record high. So it feels like we're in an alternative universe here.
Well, we are in an alternative universe. You and I are living in the universe of the 99%. The other folks the small sun are living in the universe of the One. That's exactly an alternative universe.
So then, given that we've started out talking about the impact of Thomas Piketty's book, which you have to admit is pretty unusual to be a runaway bestseller, isn't it?
It's extraordinary.
So should we just be grateful for small mercies here?
No, somebody pointed out to me, actually it was his translator, who's an old friend of mine, that he hadn't realized that when Necker, the French, actually Swiss banker who was hired to sort of do a report on French finances in about 1780, Necker thought nobody would be interested in his study, and it became a kind of bestseller in the France of its time. Let's see what happens in a while. You know, when Piketty's book becomes a bestseller, it's kind of a warning sign.
Well, you know, I spoke a little while back, Tom Ferguson, with Senator Bernie Sanders about, you know, the possibility that he might run for president.
Yep.
And he has a real dilemma because he doesn't want to be a spoiler like Ralph Nader was in Florida in 2000 and help elect an extreme right-winger like George W. Bush. So, given the nature of electoral politics in this country, third parties end up being spoilers whether they want to or not. And at the same time, I think he recognizes the need that he should be on the Democratic debates to move that debate to the left, because as Dennis Kucinich used to do when he ran for president, you know? I mean, in other words, with Hillary Clinton and whoever and Vice President Biden running and having a debate, that's not really going to be that exciting, at least to my mind.
Yeah, well, he can enter the Democrat. I'm not going to give political advice to anybody here, but obviously he's free to enter the Democratic Party primaries too. And if he did, I suspect it would have exactly the effect you're suggesting.
I see. So he could sort of temporarily relinquish being America's longest-serving independent lawmaker.
Well, he's not going to be able to do it from a third party. That's a non-starter,
right.
I think. That's just not going to happen. If you're asking me for a clinical judgment, whether I like it or not, that's just not in the cards in 2016.
And also running your new senator there in Massachusetts, Elizabeth Warren.
Elizabeth Warren.
That seems to be a pipe dream, too.
I think at the let's see what happens. Remember, we all thought that Hillary Clinton was a shoo-in in 2008.
So you wouldn't discount the possibility?
I'm not persuaded that anybody has a lock on the nomination in 2016 right now.
Well, it'd be great to see that, don't you think? Just in closing, Tom Ferguson, what would happen in this new environment where there's a growing awareness of income inequality? Maybe a left-wing candidate could surprise everybody.
Well, you may see candidates from all kinds of places surprising people, but I wouldn't rule anything out. And then, but when the center really dissolves, it really dissolves. And so, you know, a lot of strange things happen.
Well, Tom Ferguson, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Sure. Thank you very much.
Again, I've been speaking with Thomas Ferguson, who's a professor of political science at the University of Massachusetts, Boston. He's a member of the advisory board for George Soros' Institute for New Economic Thinking and a contributing editor to The Nation. He's the author of Golden Rule, The Investment Theory of Part Competition and the Logic of Money-Driven Political Systems. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me. And I'll be back again on Sunday at 11 a.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Land here on the
disappear.